Welcome back, ladies. I'm Emily Thomas, and you are listening to the Mom Struggling Well podcast, the podcast that helps you love your actual life so you do not need to keep trying to run away from home. Each week, we talk here about how perfection is nonsense. I'm still trying to believe that. I mostly do now. And that peace is a perspective shift away. So I had a perspective shift this week. A lot of them, actually. My precious little darlings have been home from school. You know, it's been the Thanksgiving holiday. And where there are children, there are shenanigans. This particular break involved lots of destruction of property. Not on purpose. My kids are lovely. But sometimes they break things. Sometimes they light things on fire. It was really funny. A very good moment of parents just commiserating when at my home on Thanksgiving night, one mother stated, "I think my children just don't make good choices. Like, I don't understand what's actually going on inside their brain." And at that very moment, I did not know this, but there was a child inside the dryer hiding for hide and seek. So let's not do that. But then one of my children thought, "I found you in the dryer. I'm not just going to open the door and say, I found you," or whatever you say at the end of hide and go seek. I can't even remember right now. But they just, you know what, took the opportunity to turn the dryer on. Yes. That's also after I had already gotten a phone call about some property that a child of mine had destroyed at a previous party. And when just the day before, my children had gotten out the lighter fluid and added that to the fire pit when I wasn't looking for a second. I was like sitting at the window watching because I knew they were building a fire in the fire pit. You know, it's so hard to know when do you give them some reins and when do you, like, when are you being super protective and you just need to kind of, I usually choose the wrong things and I give them freedom where only a fool would give them freedom, but I really am trying. Sometimes onlookers probably wonder. But anyway, so I just want to make you feel better about your parenting. I'm sure that you had a whole lot of together time during this holiday, and I hope everybody has survived. And if your kids are school age, praise the Lord, they've gone back to school as of this morning. So my perspective shift about children turning on home appliances with other humans inside of them, you know how that's great? What that tells me is that my children do know how to operate the washer and dryer, and that means I've done something right. Also, I can continue to thank the Lord that they did not start the washing machine with a child in it. Ugh. And you know what? If you are going to go get lighter fluid and make a fire bigger with that, that shows some resourcefulness. And it also shows that I need to get a giant safe and lock up most things in my house from my children. So I have some work to do. All right, ladies. So this December, we are going to be talking about finishing well. It just makes sense, right? This one was kind of an easy one. So we want to hear from you. Send an email to hello@momstrugglingwell.com. Sweet Katie or Yulia, depending on who's working that day, will be compiling some emails. So this is the topic, finishing well. So tell us your stories of what did you do to finish well? Something needed to be ending or something was ending and it was hard. And how did you flip it? What perspective shift did you take that turned something that could have been a disaster into something that you finished well? Conversely, what did you really try to finish well and it turned out to be a disaster? Make us laugh. We need it. Also, what is just something that is starting to end, needing to end, and you are having a problem with it? Maybe there just needs to be a breakup of some sort. That sounds sad. But maybe you've got a situation that comes to mind when I say finishing well, problems. Send those to us as well at hello@momstrugglingwell.com and me and Rebecca will solve it for you free of charge. We don't even charge sales tax, you guys. We really are humanitarians. All right. Well, today is a story of sexual abuse. So I wanted to just give you a trigger warning. Nothing is graphic, but the topic is covered. I am interviewing my friend Mary DeMuth, and she has sexual abuse as part of her story. We talk about things like, how do you parent after you've been traumatized? What to look for in a safe church? What are we supposed to do if we suspect that some abuse is going on? I think you're going to find this to be a really practical chat, and I hope you learn a lot. I know I sure did. So let's go ahead and get started. Good morning, Mary. How are you?
I am good. How are you?
I'm good. Where do you actually live? I don't know.
I actually live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area.
Actually, okay, so we both live in Dallas. I love that. I didn't know that. You actually do. Okay. Will you introduce yourself to my listeners who don't know you?
I will. I am Mary, and I have been married almost 29 years. I've got three adult children who are in their 20s, and I'm a writer, so I've written almost, a little over 40 books. And
oh my goodness.
I know. Crazy, huh?
Yeah.
That's my full-time job as well as speaking. And that's what I do with my time mostly, is to encourage people and to write books for them.
I love that. 40 books. Do you have a favorite, or is it whatever one you just finished?
Well, typically it has been my memoir, Thin Places. I'm proud of that book. But I would now say that it actually is my latest book about the sexual abuse crisis in the church. And so, because I feel like everything was kind of propelling itself forward for me to write this particular book. And it feels like the book I was meant to write. I just had to wander around in the wilderness of 40 other books to get there. But no problem.
Oh my gosh. So will you, I'm going to start with, there was a sentence in the front of your book, and it really, I just had to underline it and star it. I think that it talks about like the place you were at when you first started writing this. So I'm just going to read it. It says, I grieve the pervasiveness of cover-up, meaning sexual abuse in the church, though I will not let its cancer silence me. My grief has morphed into holy urgency. And I feel like that really sums up like what's happening and how important it is to talk about, but not to let it consume you. So tell us your story and why you even have knowledge of all of this.
I have this crazy story, and sadly it happened when I was 5 years old, and just was taken out by some baby. Well, I was being babysat by an older lady. Her name was Eva. And I would come home from kindergarten every day and have a half day kindergarten experience. And then she would push me out the door to these two neighborhood boys, and they would take me out. And there was no grooming for what they were going to do. And there was, they just went ahead and did it. And of course, they threatened to kill my parents if I told. And for a long time, I didn't tell. But then they started to invite other people.
So this happened on a regular basis. It wasn't
every single day of my kindergarten year. And then I finally did tell my babysitter, and she said that she would tell my mom. And I thought the next day I would be safe. And the next day the boys knocked on the door and she pushed me out the door. And so I thought that she told me the truth. I thought that she had told my mom, and she hadn't. Later to come find out.
So she was supposed to be watching you.
Yes. But she was pushing me out into the hands of these perpetrators.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. And so then I thought my mom knew, because she told me that she told my mom. And I thought no one was going to be on the earth to protect me. Mm. So I learned how to sleep, and would get home from that half day kindergarten, eat a quick sandwich, and run into her bedroom and sleep for hours and hours and hours. And it was the only way that I could save myself from what went on. And that was kind of the beginning of, we eventually moved away from that place, which was awesome. And then I had this feeling like I had this come molest me mark on my forehead that perpetrators kept trying to find me. Thankfully, I ran a lot as a little kid. I ran away from a lot of those people.
So you did find that it was happening again. More people were trying to do.
Yeah, it's like predatory people understood that I was a target. And wow. So I just found ways to run away, and I had to do it several times. And then by the time I was like 6th, 7th, 8th grade, I was really thinking, why am I even on this earth except to be either exploited or ignored? Because by this time, my mom was on her third marriage, my biological father had died, and she was never around. My stepdad was never around. I was completely and utterly alone as an only child, and started thinking about taking my life and all these kinds of things. And did have a counselor in my junior high who listened to me, which was really great. And he really saved me, saved my life. And then in ninth grade, I began going to Young Life at the invitation of a friend. Yeah. And started hearing the gospel and met Christ as a 15-year-old, as a sophomore, through one of their weekend camps. And the irony of the whole story is I'm from the Pacific Northwest. So when those boys would take me out and do those terrible things, it was often in this very dark park that had these extremely tall evergreen trees. And when I heard the gospel, I went outside from the camp and, you know, it was in the woods, of course, and I sat myself under an evergreen tree, and I didn't understand the significance of it until later, but that's where I met Christ. Was in that kind of same position in that same place. And, you know, I had just learned about how he had died on a tree. So the symbolism was just really not amazing to me in retrospect. But I met Christ then, and then I have been on a healing journey ever since that moment.
Yeah. Okay. So many questions. Number one, did your mom ever know?
I think that she probably did know, but I can't prove that, but I'm pretty sure that she did. There would have been physical evidence of what was going on. There had to have been, but she didn't care to notice it or do anything about it.
That makes me so sick. Okay. So you've accepted the Lord. Was the abuse something that was like you were experiencing like the effects of the trauma, or you just pushed it away? Because I know there's a couple ways to handle that.
Yeah. I didn't understand trauma as a 5-year-old, obviously. And as a 15-year-old meeting Christ, I, you know, definitely heard all those stories about the old is gone and the new has come. And so I firmly believed that. And there was definitely a dynamic change in me that happened once I knew that Jesus loved me and I was wanted. But in college was when I began to fall apart, because I think I was finally away from the whole toxic system of my family of origin, and I could finally begin to heal. And that's when I really started reaching out to other people who are Christians who would pray for me.
Were you like, okay, Lord, what in the world? Where were you? Tell me about those conversations.
Yeah, so I still have those. I still struggle with that. And I like to tell people that it's okay to have those kinds of questions and struggles, because it's normal. I'm a mom, and I know that if I knew that one of my children was being harmed, I would intervene. So it doesn't make sense to me as a mom that God would have seen it and he would have known about it. And so why didn't he intervene? And I understand all the theology about it, of course. I understand sovereignty. I understand free will. I get all that, but it's still very hard for me to reconcile. And I've made my peace with knowing that it's not going to make sense this side of heaven. And so I live in the tension of that. And that's what I do. But I definitely have had those questions all along and wrestled through them. And yet still, I think part of that process is knowing that his shoulders are big enough to handle my questions, and that he's actually inviting me into relationship. And if I don't ask him those questions, then I'm not walking forward in relationship with him. So I may as well dialogue with him. He already knows about it anyway, so I may as well chat with him about it.
Good. I love that. We're going to take a quick break to talk body care. Do you know what's in your deodorant? I didn't used to either. When I did some research, though, I learned that there are lots of not great ingredients in our deodorant, and unfortunately, those harmful ingredients end up absorbed into our skin, where they can cause problems. In fact, these ingredients have been linked to cancer. That's really bad news. But Hug Me Deodorant by Bloom is all natural, safe, and sustainable. And it works. That is so important. Bloom cares about what we put into our bodies, and we should care too. So how does it work? Hug Me Deodorant by Bloom, that's B-L-U-M-E, it's made with probiotics. The probiotics encourage your body to make more good bacteria, and as a result, your body produces less bad bacteria, so BO doesn't exist. Hug Me is natural deodorant that actually works. Mainstream antiperspirants contain aluminum, which gets absorbed into our bloodstream, and it's been linked to cancer. This deodorant has been rated the best deodorant ever by the New York Post. And you can check out Bloom for other safe, sustainable self-care products, including face wash. They also have organic pads and tampons. Hug Me by Bloom keeps you feeling fresh and super huggable. Right now, our listeners are going to get 25% off of your first stick and free shipping. So just go to bloom.com/SWP. That's bloom.com/SWP for 25% off your first stick and free shipping. If you don't love it and feel amazing when you wear it, return it for a full refund, no questions asked. That's BLUME.com/SWP. Let's talk about how that affected your parenting. I feel like I would never want to let my kids out of my sight.
Right. Well, first of all, there's the whole idea of should I have kids, you know, because of just that fear of I didn't know how to parent. I had zero example. In fact, my example was wholly negative. But I had this deep desire to parent. There was something about me that wanted to see this redemption come through on the other side. And so when I started to have kids, especially the first one being a daughter, I was terrified and immobilized and freaked and worried, like, would this happen again? How can I prevent this from happening? And just knowing how dark this world is and, you know, how can I possibly do that? And it's excessively hard to figure out because the truth is, this is a chaotic, broken world full of sinful people doing sinful things. And of course, I did everything I could to protect my kids, but that there's no guarantee. And so there's that pain and fear of that happening again.
Did you find that you sheltered them more, or what was that like, your choices of babysitter? Like,
ooh. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure I made mistakes in that area, and I probably over sheltered them sometimes and under sheltered them others, just like any parent would do. And so, you know, of course, I've also, you know, apologized to my kids when I messed up. That was something that didn't happen in my home. No one ever apologized. I was always the one at fault. And so part of my parenting was kind of like, it was an experiment because I tell people my parenting journey began on my knees, and it stayed there because I didn't have any sort of training. And we learn by how we observe our lives, right?
Yeah.
Not by reading books, although I read every possible parenting book, even wrote parenting books first part of my career. And none of that helped me as much as just getting on my knees and saying, I can't do this. I don't know how. Please help me. My fallback is this. Help me, Jesus. Help me, help me, help me.
So good. There's a beauty in knowing that you have no idea what you're doing, because I think some people think they've got it sorted and that's when they're in trouble.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So then let's talk about your book is about the church in general and the sexual abuse happening within it. And what can the church do about this? And how did you move from your trauma to the wider problem?
Right. So my abuse didn't happen within the church, and very clear about that. Although I just have a piece out today about the Boy Scouts of America, which they have their own crisis on their hands.
Yes.
The boys were Boy Scouts, and their father was a scoutmaster, and he was there during those times in the other room, not being curious about what those boys were doing to me. And they also were from the Mormon church. So in a sense, you know, they were definitely church-going people that were doing that to me. The reason I wrote this book was that I kept hearing stories from people, fellow survivors who have been harmed in the church, and the church has turned a blind eye. And they have tended to circle the wagons, protect their reputation at any cost, and do anything to protect the institution and even the perpetrator, and many times, and the reputation of the perpetrator, over doing the right thing and calling the police and going down a legal route, which is what it should have done in the first place. And it just keeps happening over and over and over again. And thankfully, with the Me Too movement, the holy light of God is being shed upon this cover-up that's been happening in every denomination. It's not just a Catholic problem. Obviously, it's an everything problem. It's in any institution. It's everywhere. Whenever there's an institution bent on protecting itself, you will find sexual abusers being protected. And so this is a fundamental problem, and I felt like we needed to talk about it, and we needed to do a lot better because we're supposed to be the safest place on earth. We're supposed to represent the hands and feet of Jesus Christ. The hands and feet of Jesus Christ should not harbor predators.
No.
And it should not prefer them over the cries of their victims.
Oh my gosh, I know it. How do you even handle hearing these stories? And I think I would not handle it well if I knew too much.
Well, if you've seen me on Twitter lately, you can see kind of just the weight of my own, how it's taking its toll on my personal life. So just bearing the weight of hundreds of stories, probably thousands of stories. And I'm not a counselor, so, you know, it's not my expertise, but I still feel this compulsion to listen to people because they haven't been. And so somebody needs to. Yeah. And so I have definitely felt the heaviness of the weight of all these stories. But in a way, I'm super glad that I have the privilege of doing so because God has brought me on a healing journey. I'm not fully healed. I'll never boast that this side of heaven. But I've come a long, long way. And therefore, in this discipleship model of the church, it is my job as an older woman to mentor younger people who are walking this journey for the first time and they're bewildered and broken and they need some wisdom.
So what do you suggest? What do they do if a listener knows that something happened and it shouldn't have happened and nobody's doing anything? Or they're too afraid to even say something?
Well, if they are a survivor themselves and they have not told, I have often said to audiences, an untold story never heals. So they first need to tell their story. If they're freaked out about that, write it down on a piece of paper and then pray about a safe person to show it to. So even if they can't voice it, they can at least hand the piece of paper over to a friend who is safe, who can read it, and at least it's out of you in that place. And because it festers and it can become very dark in there if it stays inside of you. And the enemy's lies can be exceptionally persuasive in that dark space of just you and nobody else.
Yes.
So get it out. If you know of a predatory situation, especially with a minor, then it is your job as a Christian to be a mandatory reporter. I believe that all Christ followers are mandatory reporters, whether you're a teacher or a counselor or whatever, you need to report that to the authorities, and it's not your job to investigate it. There are people who are trained who know how to investigate properly. If you have an inkling about something, let them know, and they will take it from there.
That's good, because I think some people want proof.
Yeah.
You know, first, like, because it is a big allegation. You don't just want to throw that around.
Yeah. But if you go to the authorities, there's nobody, it's in a small circle at that point. It's not like it's on Twitter. It's not like it's, you know, out there in the world. They will take it and investigate it. And if there is enough there, then they will go forward with it. And that prevents, you know, these false allegations that come out. Your job is simply to report. If you have a funny feeling in your heart that something is not quite right, you must report.
Let me tell you about one of my favorite services. It comes in handy weekly for the Thomas family, and it keeps my family eating healthy despite my very packed schedule. I've told you about PrepDish before because they've been faithfully sponsoring this show for years. So my friend Allison is the founder of PrepDish, and she's a genius. She emails me weekly a document with menus, which include the shopping list, all nice and organized. So what you get with PrepDish is a weekly menu, which includes the shopping list, and the shopping list is all nice and organized, which I like because when I make my own shopping list, it's a hot mess. Also included in your weekly email is the order to prep the items, which makes the best use of your time. And after 2 to 3 hours in the kitchen, you have a week's worth of whole food dinners ready to be heated and served. Each week you get 4 meals, a salad, a breakfast, a snack, and a dessert. I love PrepDish, and I really think that you will too. To try it for free for 2 weeks, go to prepdish.com/MSW. That's prepdish.com/MSW for 2 weeks completely free of this amazing service. prepdish.com/MSW. One last break to tell you about a fascinating product I didn't even know I needed. Ember Wave is a bracelet that's there when you're either too hot or too cold. Everyone's idea of comfortable is unique. So in any given situation, somebody is going to be uncomfortable. At my house, I'm usually cold, and this Emberwave bracelet is getting a lot of use. All you do is press this bracelet to activate a burst of heating or cooling. The sensation inside your wrist pairs your body with your mind, and you'll feel more comfortable in minutes. Also, and this is my favorite part, the Ember Wave has a mode that lets you fall asleep by keeping you at a comfortable temperature as you drift off. I use this every night, and I do much less complaining to my husband about how cold I am. And because of the lack of complaining, he is also a big fan of my Ember Wave. Ember Wave was invented by three MIT scientists and named one of Time Magazine's best inventions of 2018 and has been reviewed by a number of leading technical publications. Just today, I went and had tacos with a Mom Struggling Well listener who was in town for Thanksgiving. I had never met her before. She just asked if we could meet. And she said, hey, will you bring that Ember Wave thing? I want to try it out. And so I sure enough did. And she tried it right out there at the taco place and was like, hold it. I think I need to get myself one of these. So just because of the Black Friday, Cyber Monday, just big sale situation, Mom Struggling Well listeners are going to get $60 off if they go to emberwave.com/MSW. So the way you spell it is EMBRWAVE. So that's emberwave.com/MSW for $60 off your Ember Wave. What about a church helps you understand that it's a safe place?
One of the things is clearly communicated policies and procedures about children and how they're going to protect their children. And really good churches have this on their website. You can find it as you check your kids in at childcare. It's just well communicated. It's over communicated. I don't think we can over communicate it enough. This is how we protect our children. We have these policies in place. We have cameras in rooms. We have the rule of three that if a child is going somewhere, two adults must go with, and those two adults cannot be related. And just these kinds of things that are really important. Another thing that shows me a church is safe is if they share survivor stories from the pulpit. And I don't see any churches doing this, hardly. Maybe 1% of churches are doing this. But for me as a survivor, having been in church for decades and never hearing my story from the front made me feel like I was a freak. And even though I knew intellectually the stats that a whole bunch of people sitting around me have the exact same story as me, I still felt like I was a freak. So to have from the front of the church stories from people saying, this is what happened to me, whether it be domestic violence or sexual abuse, and yet here's how Jesus intersected that story, would go really, really far. And I also think that pastors need to preach the Bible. And what I mean by that is the Bible actually addresses this topic, but people just don't. They just pretend the Tamar narrative isn't in there or the Bathsheba narrative. They just pretend it's not there or they don't see it from a survivor standpoint. And so preaching the Bible is actually really important. And we need to teach the whole counsel of Scripture, not just the happy clappy parts.
No joke. Yeah. Yes. I have a question. If somebody thinks that maybe something happened to them, like I've counseled women who, the things they were telling me happened was 100% sexual abuse. And they either think it's not a big deal or think that the person didn't know what they were doing, or they think they're making it up. So I think sometimes it's buried so deep they don't even know that it happened on a conscious level. Certainly unconsciously it affects everything that they do. But how would you help someone know that what had happened to them was not okay?
That's a great question. So one of the things that I have is if they go to we2.org/21 days, they'll receive 21 days of emails about the best things that I've learned about healing. And with that, they'll receive something called the Sexual Abuse Impact Quiz. Okay. And it's just a checklist of things that typically happen to those who are trauma victims and sexual abuse survivors. And they will be utterly shocked at how many of those check boxes they have. And then they can use those check boxes to share with their counselor or their husband and say, this is how it's affected me. And just sometimes I found that people just checking those off, they realize, oh, this was a big deal. It did happen. And I find it a lot of times, especially if you know your abuser, which most people do, people make excuses for their abuser, like, oh, well, it's grandpa. He didn't, you know, he's just a dirty old man or whatever. And that's just how he is. And so finally, I got a story. I get stories all the time. So I get a story yesterday from someone who's never shared her story before. It was a terrible story. It was a story of rape. And she couldn't see it that way because her father, even though it wasn't her father that raped her, her father had made her think it was her fault and made, you know, called her all sorts of bad names about it and everything. And so I wrote back and I said, if your daughter came to you with this story, how would you see it? And she goes, oh, it's totally rape. I'm like, there we go.
Okay.
So sometimes you have to like remove yourself from the story and ask yourself that question. If my child came to me with this story as a parent, how would I see it and how would I respond to it? And just tell the truth about what has happened to you. Because if you cannot tell the truth, and if you say, well, there's other people's stories that are worse, you know, my uncle just stuck his hand on my leg and leered at me, that's not anything. You're like, no, it's something and it hurt you and it's a violation and you need to name it and walk through it and be healed from it.
Yes. Oh, man. Okay. So where have we not gone that you would like to go? So I want to make sure we hit everything.
I would say that the more we become aware of this and the more we speak up, the less darkness there will be. And so my encouragement to listeners is if you see something, say something. And if your church has been hiding in the dark, say something. I think this has flourished for so long because the darkness is so overwhelming and we just have gone with the status quo and we haven't begun to speak up. So that's really important. And also the healing journey is its layers, it stops and starts. And please, just because you've had a trigger does not mean you haven't healed on the healing journey. So I've had all these moments in my healing journey where I'm like, okay, I'm done. You know, I finished healing from my sexual abuse, ha ha ha, and I naively move on. And then some terrible trigger happens and I'll think, oh, I haven't healed at all. So I look at it as an all or nothing mindset, but it's a process. And so just realize there's more layers to heal. It's not a linear process. It's more like an onion process, you know, or peeling the layers of a cabbage because we're getting at the heart of the issue. And so persevere anyway, and don't let a trigger sideline you and think that you're not healing.
That's really good. You would recommend counseling, I'm assuming?
Yes, of course. Okay. I've done every possible, well, not everything. I'm sure there's other things I haven't done, but I have been prayed for. I have read the word. I have read lots of books. I have gone to Christian counseling. I've gone to secular counseling. I've gone to trauma therapy. And all of those things have been part of the healing journey. So yes, I highly recommend getting some really good help. And support groups like the one at your church are also really helpful.
How important is confronting the perpetrator, would you say?
I don't think it's necessary to heal. I think, well, here's one thing that I've learned. When a child, the statistics are that when a child makes an outcry, they will have a very good and strong healing journey if two things happen. One is if their parent says, I believe you. The second is if the parent brings the police into it. And so, so sometimes what we do need is justice. Now, sadly, the statute of limitations, which we're trying to change, has run out on a lot of people being able to bring their perpetrators to justice. I also would highly caution someone to do something like that alone. I would not want them to do that alone. And I also would say that most perpetrators don't repent. If they have multiple victims, they're so entrenched in their sin that they somehow have convinced themselves that they're the victims, which is a huge red flag.
Wow.
Yes. And so if you ever encounter a perpetrator who at the end of the conversation, you feel like they're a victim, you know that they're a very cunning perpetrator. So you probably will not get an apology and you will probably get a justification. It might mess you up more. So sometimes I advise to write a letter to the person and never mail it, or mail it and let it go and pretend that you'll never receive a response, or what, you know, just to let go of what's inside of you for your sake. I recently did find one of my perpetrators. He ended up dying in 2005, so before I found him. And I was so relieved because I didn't want to have to think about what I would do with that. And a lot of victims also carry around this guilt of, well, what if they did more, you know, and what if I could have prevented it? But we also have to give ourselves grace in knowing I was five and I told someone, and there's nothing I could have done to in that situation as a five-year-old. And so we also have to give ourselves grace for, you know, we don't need to take on the mantle of, well, what if they did more and we didn't prevent it? We did everything we could as a trauma victim. We also don't understand the nature of trauma, that people will say things to me like, well, you should have kicked them or you should have fought back. And they don't understand that fight or flight are really rare. Freeze and fawn are very normal. So if you freeze, I freeze. I just freeze when someone tries to attack me. So then you have to deal with this feeling of, well, I didn't fight back and I must have wanted it because I didn't fight back. Mm. So there's all sorts of layers to all of this.
Oh, 100%. Are there resources that you would recommend to a mom to help her children know that they need to say something?
Yeah, there's, well, in terms of church, there's the Child Safeguarding Policy book that Boz Chavijian and a partner wrote. So that's kind of gives you a really good overlay of the whole, what needs to be done in the process of the legal system and all of that. And there are, there is a children's book by Justin and Lindsay Holcomb. I think it's God Made All of Me. And so there are, there's definitely lots of resources out there. One of the under-heralded resources out there that is probably the best bet for any parent worried about this, you know, and they're wondering if their child needs to make an outcry, is a children's advocacy center in their local place. So we have one here. I live in Rockwall, Texas, and we have a local children's advocacy center. And that is the absolutely most amazing, best place to bring a child with an outcry, because they know what to do. And they keep all of their services under one roof. So the child isn't going over here for this exam and over there for something else and over here for the police. It's all in one place, and they can accomplish all this trauma stuff in one setting instead of multiple places.
Yeah. Okay. And what about prevention? Would you recommend talking about, I talk to my kids about it a lot, to where I'm probably like talking about it too, you know, just checking in. I feel like I do the check-in a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's too much. I don't know.
No, it's not too much. I don't think you can do that too much. But one of the things that's heartening to me is that kids are more, because their parents are more aware of this issue, kids are more aware of this issue. We recently had a case back in the summer at a Lifeway camp where two kids came forward and said, this counselor touched me. And that may not have happened several years ago because parents weren't training their kids. I see that as, even though it's terrible, I also see it as a victory, because those two kids knew that they weren't supposed to be touched that way. And they went to the authorities in the moment, like they did it within that week. And so what we need to do as parents is we need to talk about appropriate language, like, what is that called? We need to talk about, you know, obviously, no one touches you where your swimsuit touches, of course. Mm-hmm. They need to know what sex is. They're going to see it, sadly, in porn around them, as much as we try to prevent that from happening and should try to prevent that from happening. But also another thing that I recently learned that was really wise, and it's this: no adult ever will need a child's help. If you're an adult, you don't need a kid's help for anything. And so that's something that they need to know, because that's the beginning of the grooming process. Hey, I need your help. Or could you help me with this? And that could be someone that they know or a stranger. So it kind of is a really wise piece of advice.
It really is. Yes. I always tell my kids, like, tricky people are tricky, for they don't have a black ninja suit on. Like, we always, they're not going to look like bad guys, or you wouldn't let them near you. Oh, man. Okay. So, you said that you're seeing things getting better in that there's more awareness of it. What do you suggest that we do? What would be helpful?
Right. So it's important that if we hear of something within our denomination or our church, that we continue to put pressure on leaders about it. Otherwise, if we're not saying anything, they're going to hope it goes away. There's one particular church fairly near to where I live that I think they're employing that tactic. They harbored somebody and protected someone, and they think that silence is awesome. And so we have to, in those situations, speak up and say, whatever happened here, let's ask them some more questions, especially if it's your church. And then the proactive side is to continue to educate your kids about this issue, to be a vigilant parent, of course, be praying for your child, and be a part of the solution and offer to start a group in your church and offer to be the face of the healing journey if you feel empowered and led to do so.
Okay. Mary, thank you for writing this, and thank you for being that voice and hearing all the stories. That is, I can't even imagine how heavy, but I'm so thankful for what you do.
Well, thanks. It's been an interesting journey, but it's been a joy. I'm really grateful that We Too is out there now. I worked on getting it out there for 9 months. So it is like birthing a baby. I'm like, the baby's out.
Yay.
It's living. People are reading it. So yeah. It's so great.
That's good. Well, thank you so much. All right, ladies, I hope you learned a lot. Let's go ahead and talk about our strategies to struggle well based on what Mary said this week. I hope that you are taking away one thing for sure: the importance of listening to other people's stories and believing what they say. I can't imagine little Mary telling her story and having nothing happen. And maybe you can identify with that. I sure hope you can, but I bet a lot of you can. And that feeling of having no voice and no control at all. What a terrible feeling. And I'm sorry that that happened, if it did. So we can struggle well by listening to other people's stories and doing something when something needs to be done. Maybe you could identify with what Mary said about living in the tension of unanswered questions here on earth. Why did God not stop that? Where was He when all this happened? All these are very, very normal questions. And I loved what Mary said, that God's shoulders are big enough to handle our questions. Keep asking them. Keep the conversation open and going. That is what a relationship is, and that is what God has invited us into with Him. We don't really have a context for something that grand and amazing, but that is the truth that we live in as Christ followers. I loved what Mary said, that an untold story never heals. Please tell your story. If you think maybe something happened to you that was inappropriate, tell someone that you trust. I'll tell you again the website that Mary said, and it's also going to be in the show notes at momstrugglingwell.com, but we2.org/21days. That will help you understand if you are a survivor of sexual abuse. And I think some people would wonder, how would you not know that you're a survivor? But like I said in the interview, I have talked to several women who don't think that their story is quote unquote bad enough, or they don't think that the perpetrator could possibly have known what they were doing, or they think it was an accident, or they blame themselves. And we don't understand the way that that rewires our brain. We don't understand the way that we live our lives on a daily basis is affected by that thing we think was an accident or not a big deal. I see almost every single one of my clients in the eating disorder field has some sexual abuse in their history. It is just, there's a lack of control that's going on. And so they choose to try to control their body by controlling their food. And so I can tell you I'm around stories of sexual abuse a lot, and I see the effects of that trauma on people. Everyone deals with it a little bit differently. What is so important, though, is that you deal with it. Okay, so if you're hearing this and this is really hitting a nerve that's uncomfortable, first of all, I'm very sorry. I don't want to be the one to make you uncomfortable, but I do want to be the one to encourage you to tell someone. Yeah, healing is possible. Freedom is possible. But you got to go through some stuff to get there. but it's definitely possible. Mary had talked about how she wishes she had heard some stories of redemption, some stories of just brokenness in from the world from the front of her church. I think a lot of churches very sadly spend most of their time trying to make it seem like none of that stuff happens at their church. Well, we all know that's baloney, right? And so something that has been so healing and freeing to me is that my church does a lot of that. In fact, every single week there is a story of a broken life that has been restored on the front of the church bulletin or whatever. And so God has chosen to use my church to kind of have it become a nationwide type of thing. And so you can go to a website. You can even find if there is a recovery group in your area that you can meet with and talk about redemption and all that kind of stuff. So if you are feeling like a freak and the only one that you even know who has any kind of brokenness in your story, you are just the only one who is being honest. You are not the only one who's broken, not even a little bit. So there is a website that my church has. It's called lifeisbroken.com, and it's just got some stories. Some of them are you can listen to, some of them are videos that you can watch. But if nothing else, they're organized by topic and sin struggles, and you can look at it and realize that you're not the only one, and that God is able to handle it, and He wants there to be freedom and healing, and you are not the only one. That is a lie from the enemy of your soul. So let's not believe that one. Yeah? Okay. All right, so again, we want to hear from you this week on the topic of finishing well. Where have you finished well? What did you try to finish well that ended up being not so great? What is a finishing well problem that you're having at this very moment? Let us in, okay? Let us help you. Help us help you. Email hello@momstrugglingwell.com. And as always, share this episode if you got something out of it. Make sure you're subscribed to the show. Why on earth would you not? All I want for Christmas is your review on iTunes. I don't even care if you even don't listen on iTunes. Just get an iPhone in your hands and rate and review the show. Will you do that for me? And I do love hearing from you on Instagram @momstrugglingwell. Send me a message. All right, let me pray for us. Lord, there's some things in our lives that happen that are so horrific that I don't even know. I can't even believe that you are able to see all the hurt in this world and handle it, because I know very little about all of it, and it's overwhelming to me. So thank you, Lord, that you are strong. Thank you that you're present. Thank you that you are better than we understand. Please help our unbelief. Please hold us in our brokenness. Help us know that you're here. You are the great physician. You are our comforter. God, the sisters who are listening to this who are just in the actual pit, would you please bring them the resources they need? You are always faithful and you are always good to us. Help us know how to navigate this broken world well, remembering that it is not our home. In Jesus' name, amen.